Why fruit makes you fat with Dr. Anthony Chafee. We discuss why fructose, the sugar in fruit, can be a killer in this interview and the three things that are ruining your carnivore results. That is coming up in part two next week, so make sure you subscribe. Also, the October Carnivore Challenge is now open, featuring Dr. Kilt, Coach Bronson, and Coach Cherish. I'll leave a link in the description. See you there.
So there has been a bit of controversy around the carnivore diet. We see different variations of the carnivore lifestyle, including some fruit. So I wanted to know from you, why are we carnivores and what should we be eating on a carnivore diet?
Well, I mean, the reason we're carnivores is just biologically, our ancestors have just been eating meat, and you know, it's not that we can't eat other things. It's just that what's optimal for us is meat, because we don't have all the defenses against all the different plant toxins that you find in nature. All plants are able to defend themselves in different ways, just like all living organisms are. And while they're stationary and they can't run away or fight back, you know, they have to use other means of defense. And one of those is by just being toxic and having some level of toxicity. If you're, you know, evolutionary arms race where, you know, the plants are sort of trying to become more poisonous so less things can eat them, and animals are becoming adapted to those poisons, you know, that's fine. And a koala can co-evolve with eucalyptus and they can both survive together. But, you know, if you've stepped out of that, then you know, the plants are going to keep getting poisonous and you're going to be losing those adaptations that allow you to break down those poisons. And so that's what happened to us. And so it's definitely optimal for us not to eat any plants. We get everything we need from meat. And there's just a ton of data showing that from an anthropological point of view and a paleontological point of view, anatomically and biochemically and biologically. But the reason that we specifically really should avoid things like fruit is because of sugar and fructose in particular. We find fructose particularly sweet because we don't know of anything. Well, it's thought that because we don't know of anything that's acutely poisonous for us that contains fructose, that, you know, our ancestors recognize that as safe. The ones that recognize that as sweet and like, oh, that's good, I like that. That they're the ones that were able to get a quick hit of energy and survive, whereas someone else would have been like, I don't really like that, I'm not going to eat that. And maybe they weren't able to be as adaptable to changing environments and starvation as other people would be. I mean, we have a big advantage on other animals, because if we can't get meat, we can eat other things. Yes. And, you know, if a lion isn't going to get meat, it can't eat other plants to survive. It will just die. It will starve to death. And that does happen. So, you know, we have been able to be very successful as a species because we have a bit of cross protection against plants. And so we're able to do that. Sugar, specifically fructose, causes long-term and short-term harm. Long-term being like metabolic disease, and short-term by disrupting our metabolic, you know, metabolism and biochemistry. So it puts us into a fat storing metabolism as opposed to a fat burning metabolism, very simply. And it also messes with our hunger signals, like blocking leptin, increasing ghrelin, which insulin blocks leptin as well. But fructose independently blocks leptin and increases the effects of ghrelin, which makes us feel that we're hungry and we're much more hungry than we actually are. And so we tend to overeat. And so that's the problem with fructose and fruit in particular, is that, but, you know, anything that tastes bad will be bad for you. There will be something, and that's what taste is. You know, it's one of our, you know, five major senses. And so if you're noticing something that's bitter or doesn't taste right, doesn't taste great, you know, like maybe you bite into an onion, it's like, wow, that's remarkably bad. But you maybe use a little bit as a seasoning. Okay, that's one thing. But like, just try eating the whole thing. Like, I can take a big bite of steak and be fine. You know, you take a big bite of a onion, you're not fine. And so, yeah, you know, there's going to be things in there that your body's warning you away from. Like, hey, you know, there are things in here you don't want. Spit it out. So that's where that strong offensive taste comes from. That's your body signaling you with negative feedback. Don't eat this. This is bad for us. Fructose is an outlier. Sugar is an outlier. Most carbohydrates are mildly sweet at best. Fructose is very, very sweet. And that's thought to be why, because of that recognition of short-term safety. You know, we wouldn't find this in the wild as we do now in a grocery store. It was certainly seasonal, wasn't available in all areas of the world, certainly not to our ancestors who were living through the ice ages and hunting mammoths and things like that. Lingonberries, things that people way up north would be getting now. They're very tart. And so they're not really sweet. They don't have much sugar in it. We've bred these to have much, much more fructose in them. So it's a bit different. So the fruit that we have now also is nothing like the fruit that we had available to us, even 20,000 years ago or 10,000 years ago. So those are some of the reasons why. But yeah, the water does get muddy because, it's
very muddy. I'm thinking of one particular carnivore expert that talks about inclusion of fruit and has it in his diet every single day. And I think it can get really confusing when we want to set a carnivore lifestyle and we want to eat meat majority of the time, but there is the inclusion of fruit with some of these carnivore experts. So why is it that some of them do suggest having fruit?
Yeah, well, some of them have run into health issues, and they've thought that has to do with the lack of carbohydrates that they've been eating, and that's fine. I would just disagree. I don't think that was necessarily the case, especially when you see that they were having, health issues that I wasn't having, and I've been carnivore longer than they were, and people like Dr. Baker or all the people doing the ketogenic sort of diets, they've been, some of these people have been doing keto for like 20 years. And so it's not a lack of carbohydrates that was causing this, or else they would have all run into that. The Inuits, the Eskimos, the Maasai, Maasai have milk. So, they'll get a bit of lactose from that, but other populations that don't eat any carbohydrates, certainly don't eat fruit or honey, up north, you don't have that available to you anyway. They don't have any of these problems. So it's obviously there's something else going on there. It's not just the lack of carbohydrates. There are, there's several, medical and scientific institutions internationally that recognize that humans don't require any carbohydrates whatsoever throughout the course of your entire life. There's no such thing as an essential carbohydrate. Our bodies make carbohydrates. Our body makes blood sugar, liver glycogen, muscle glycogen. We have an insulin response, based on this as well. So, the thought was that if you don't have, transient spikes of insulin, you'll get dysregulation of your electrolytes. I don't have electrolyte issues. I don't have thyroid issues. And I've had them tested, and they're all optimal, not even okay, but optimal. Serious electrolyte disturbances are bad. I mean, they can be fatal. Potassium gets too far out of whack, your heart will stop. Your sodium gets too far out of whack, your brain will just stop processing properly, and you'll go into a coma and die. So these are very, very important, vital, nutrients. And so if those get completely off balance, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. And if you're going to get into that just through being in ketosis or just through being, absent of dietary carbohydrates, that should be more specific, because you do go in and out of ketosis, even on a carnivore diet, then, obviously these people would not exist. We would not exist. I would not be here today and as healthy as I am. And so that's what I think is a bit missing there, is that they looked at some of these things and they said, there's this mechanism where if you don't have enough insulin, you don't have enough carbs, you can get these problems. Mm. But they don't recognize that, and they had those problems. But they don't recognize that other people who've been doing a strict meat and water diet for far longer than they have are not getting those problems. So obviously there's something else happening. I don't necessarily know exactly what that is. I have my suspicions, but at the same time, it isn't that. That is something that, other people are doing without any of those problems. And if you have long-term hypothyroidism, that's very damaging to your body and can be fatal. Thyroid hormone is used in every single cell in your body, and it's very important. Congenital hypothyroidism, meaning that if a mother is low thyroid, while even slightly low thyroid, when pregnant with the child, they'll get something called cretinism, which is a very serious congenital misdevelopment of the fetus. And these people don't develop properly after that, even if they get proper thyroid. They get, they're short stature, they're very small, they have very specific facial deformities, and they're generally very disabled intellectually. So if you had entire populations such as the Inuit living like this, and all our ancestors living through the ice ages, not having daily sources of fruit and honey or any other carbohydrates, they would all be getting cretinism. That would last exactly one generation, because you would not be able to survive in such harsh conditions with such serious defects. And they don't have cretinism. You don't have, like, there's not this rash of cretinism throughout the Inuit population that I'm aware of. Maybe someone can find something on that, but I have never heard that before.
I think that there's also a controversy around different regions around the world where other regions do eat carbohydrates and they are quite healthy.
Yeah, I mean, it's relative, right? So it's, relative health, and we're comparing, the health of these populations against the rest of the population, most of whom is sick. Something like 70% of Americans are metabolically unwell. Find people that are like, oh, well, these guys eat carbs and they're better than these guys. I'm like, it's a pretty low bar to get over. Really a major component to health is really just avoiding things that are harmful, right? And that's my whole premise with going carnivore, is that I'm avoiding poison. Poison from plants, poison from sugar, poison from alcohol, and so forth. So there are certain things that are worse than other things, right? Mm-hmm. Like hemlock is worse than spinach, right? They're both plants, right? And so, if people are eating whole foods, they're not getting a bunch of processed, low nutrient crap that they're eating, and they're eliminating out a lot of these processed stuff, they're going to do better. They're going to do better than the norm, but they won't necessarily do as well as they could. They won't necessarily do as well as, say you or I,
yes,
if we're eating optimally. So that's the thing. And then there's obviously just, very, very disingenuous, studies and reports, such as like the Blue Zone study, which wasn't even really a study. That was like a reporter just wrote a propaganda piece and omitted a lot of very, salient points and facts and populations, and then omitted quite a lot of other things, and then just flatly lied in other ways, and then just came to a conclusion based on this. And then people just go, oh, here is the conclusion. That must be the end of the story. It's like, well, no, how would you read what they wrote and what they found and see if you think that their findings actually support their conclusions? I would say flatly no, they don't support those conclusions, that a high plant-based diet is going to promote longevity for a number of different reasons, because a lot of studies, you never read the conclusion. Just like, who cares what they think the conclusion is? You need to read their data, read their study, and see if what you can take away from that, because they can conclude whatever the hell they want. They may be perfectly genuine in their interest for knowledge and just trying to find the right thing, but they just may have just misinterpreted things, or they could be very biased, like in the Blue Zone studies or the China studies. Read the studies and then come to your own conclusions, and then see what the authors think.
I think it's so interesting to actually look at clinical studies and understand the methods, the design, and the results aren't really indicative of anything of quantitative nature.
Yeah, and that's the thing, and then you get like cherry picking and things like that as well. The Blue Zone study in particular, they pick these populations and it's fine. But there are certainly other populations that you could look at. And they were saying that these populations were plant-based populations and they live longer than other populations. Okay, fine. Well, why don't you take the other populations like Hong Kong, that has the longest life expectancy on Earth of any population at all that has been studied. Obviously, there's native populations that live way longer than that, but we don't apparently count them because they don't have, a government stamped birth certificate and things like that. But for those, we have, Hong Kong is the longest lived, and they also eat the most meat per capita on Earth. And they live far longer than other, Chinese populations in mainland China who don't eat that way. So, that's cherry picking. They picked the blue zones that they wanted to pick that fit their narrative. So, you look at Okinawa, and they have most centenarians, so people living over 100, which is fine that they have that. But then they say, oh, it's because they eat these beets and things. That's a normal staple of their diet, and they eat all this plant-based sort of thing. Omitting the fact that they actually eat a lot of meat. They actually eat a lot of pork. They say, oh, they eat very little red meat. And you have to look for weasel words. You know, they say, oh, they eat very little red meat. And you just think, oh, they eat little meat. Well, no, red meat. They eat a lot of pork, and they don't consider pork red meat. They sort of slip that one through to people. Other populations, such as, you know, Loma Linda, you know, they say, oh, well, these people live on average seven years longer than average Americans. Well, average American, again, 70% are sick and unwell. So that's not a really good comparison. But also they equate that to the fact that they eat a plant-based diet due to their religion. Okay. And yet they have other things in their religion that, you know, may actually help with that. Because you look at the Mormon population in America, they also live on average seven years longer than other Americans, exactly the same. And Mormons eat whatever Mormons eat. You know, there's no particular dietary regulation like the Seventh-day Adventists have. And so, you know, what's commonality there? They're less likely to drink, smoke, do drugs, engage in sort of risky behavior. And so that actually, surprisingly, you know, helps you stay healthy longer and live longer. So many issues with a lot of these studies that you really have to just dig in and don't just believe the conclusion, really, really like tear into it and see what you think.
Join me for part two with Dr. Anthony Chafee. We talk about why dairy is damaging your fat loss goals, what alcohol you can consume on the carnivore diet, as well as should you choose a high protein or a high fat carnivore lifestyle. I'll see you for the next one.